Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding. And check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Nail on the dial, if you know what I mean.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson and Fred Zinke here, as always, on a Tuesday. Fred, what's going on? How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. We are just chatting off air. We're pretty psyched about Fishbowl start. Scott Fishbowl starting for football. Baseball draft's going. My football league is not fast, but yours is even slower. So we'll talk more about that later. That's a tease, folks. Do you have any baseball drafts coming up?
I think I will be the guy who drafts that weekend, the last weekend before that 18th, 19th. I'll probably do multiple, you know, NFBC type drafts that weekend. I haven't wanted to jump in yet. For reasons that we'll probably talk a lot about today in the next hour, but I don't know, but I know you already did one beat Jeff Erickson draft, but I've been kind of waiting, still gauging all these guys showing up to camp first.
Right. And so I drafted on Thursday, and then Saturday, 4th of July, was just a slew of news, and it made me see the value. And I mean, I knew what the value, knew the value was there, that there was going to still be more, you know, opt-outs, still more positive tests. Well, the thing is, we're going to constantly have more positive tests. I think that that's a feature, not a bug. Well, it's literally a bug, but, you know, virus, that is. And we're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to keep dealing with that. But yeah, it'd be nice to know things more as we get closer. I wanted to get into one draft, though, before ADP was set.
It is fun to do that, right? Like, it is fun to do that. And I think the test, you're right. I don't know with the positive tests. So there's been, I guess it feels like a fair amount when you really factor it in amongst the entire league, 30 teams and, you know, like, let's just say roughly 30 players per team that are the 25 that are fantasy relevant, maybe 20, 25 that are fantasy relevant. It feels like a lot of tests. I don't know where this is all going to go. If we're going to have tests coming in as the season goes on at a higher positive test at a higher rate, or maybe we'll have them at a lower rate because all these people are coming from, you know, just living their lives in various parts of America. Whereas now they might be in, I don't want to give Major League Baseball too much credit. They might be in a better controlled environment for the next few months.
Yeah, they might. But hey, I saw like a report on Franmil Reyes. He's away from the team. They're making him have tests because he was at a 4th of July gathering this weekend where people weren't wearing masks. So he's not allowed to rejoin his teammates. The team was being cautious.
Yeah, I know. So I wonder if now the teams like will get these initial tests, then they'll get into, you know, get in with their teams, get into their locker rooms. And then the peer pressure might start to build where these guys are going to say, the veterans on some of the teams, I think I've already heard that from some of the veterans, are going to say, you see Mike Trout wearing a mask, like out on the field. Like, I think some of these guys might say, hey, look, like we're giving up, you know, months of our lives. We're away from our families now, you know, to pursue playing baseball this year, to bring a lot of teams to try to win a World Series or make the playoffs. Like, listen, we're expecting a certain standard of behavior from everyone, and we don't want you at any more parties, and you know, we don't want you in large crowds without a mask. Like, you're going to give that up until the end of September, and then we'll see where this team's at. I could see that pressure coming in the locker rooms now, whereas guys, you know, in the last couple months, you know, a lot of these guys are much younger than you and I, Jeff, and they're at home and their friends maybe are going out or hanging out with people and they want to be a part of that. I could see now in a lot of these veteran laden clubhouses guys saying, okay guys, that's done. Like, we're staying in our team bubble because if we're all doing this, let's do it right and let's try to actually win this thing.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, if you see your star teammate threatening not to play in the case of Trout, wouldn't that kind of scare you straight a little bit?
Yeah, you would think so. I would not want to be just a, you know, the fourth reliever on the Angels and have to explain to Mike Trout in the clubhouse why, you know, I felt the need to go to some some bar last night or house party or something like that. I mean, it's a tricky situation in baseball, I think, with them flying all over the country. I really think, not to get too off topic, but I think the NHL totally nailed it. Like, I think bringing them to Edmonton and Toronto and putting them in bubbles, and I've read a lot of the details on the bubbles. They've got restaurants in the bubbles, but, you know, no one's coming in and out of those bubbles of the whole league, well, half the league in each spot. I think Major League Baseball flying all over America is dicey for the players. That being said, again, like there's a lot of precautions you can take. And if Mike Trout says, hey, guys, when we get off this plane, everyone's wearing a mask, you know, all the way through till you're in your hotel room. And, you know, I think the other guys in the team might do it. And I could see guys like Trout saying, listen, like, I'm away from my family. My wife's having a baby. Like, I'm trying to honor, you know, my teammates and my organization here and help this organization win a World Series. So the rest of you are going to get on board and do what I say. I could see that. And then maybe then, at least within, I don't know, in America, but at least within baseball, maybe the cases go down. I don't, we'll see.
Yeah. I'm hoping that's the case. And that's all we can kind of do right now. It's just try to, you know, cross your fingers and hope that that works. You know, they're chartered flights at least. So hopefully there's no exposure to other people, but, you know, other people have been on that plane prior to that. It's not like it's a private plane.
Mm-hmm. I know. I really was surprised that baseball didn't figure out a way to do the bubbles like the NBA and the NHL are doing. And I don't know if they were originally talking Florida or in Arizona, which does make some sense. But I know the numbers aren't good in either one of those states. So, but still, maybe they could have found a way to make it work in those states, or maybe they had to go somewhere else. I don't know. But yeah, I know what you mean with the planes and, you know, food they're getting, like they're getting all takeout food, restaurant food again. Like it's hard to isolate them. But again, there are things they can do that, like, for example, Franmil Reyes sounds like didn't do over the long weekend. There's things they can do out of respect for their teammates. Like when he gets back in the clubhouse, maybe some veterans on the Indians say, listen, like, are you here to help? Because the Indians can totally make the playoffs, you know, and say, hey, are you here to make the playoffs with us or not? Because if you're here to make the playoffs, then let's go and wear a mask and stay tight to the rest of us and try to avoid these other situations.
Right. That's right. We're starting to see some news of some players coming back. A lot of these Phillies, you know, Aaron Nola, I think he didn't test positive, but they held him away out of precaution. Well, he's back. May not be ready for the start of the season. At any rate, I would expect shortened outings from him, one or two outings. Hector Neris is back. Saw a note that Scott Kingery is coming back, or nearing return. He isn't back yet, but there are some positive signs here for some of these initial positive testers. You know, we don't know how far behind are they. How much time does a position player really need? That's up for debate. I think there's some time still. You know, I don't think they can just step right out of the box and be ready. But they were working out together down in Florida in the first place. That's part of the problem, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the big thing will be, how long do these position players need? They might be in shape. How long do they need, you know, of live game action to really get their timing down? We often hear in April, especially with veteran players, I feel like, but we often hear in April, you know, oh, so-and-so, he's just, even coming through spring training, he just doesn't totally have his timing down. You know, we see guys get off to slow starts. Well, a slow start this season will be half the season. So,
right.
You know, like if a hitter, for example, DJ LeMahieu, for example, you know, like if he misses most of this ramp up period, is he going to be able to just walk into the batter's box on opening day, having had, I mean, I'm sure he was practicing on his own, you know, during the shutdown, but is he going to be able to just walk in the batter's box on opening day and start hitting 300 like he usually does? Or is he going to have a period of time where he's hitting 200,
right,
220, 250 until he can get his timing down? I don't know. And I'm downgrading. I think the big picture is, how much are we downgrading these guys?
Right. And the follow-up that too is, you know, how deep is the team? Like if DJ LeMahieu gets off to a short, slow start, well, they have other options. And he's important to the team, don't get me wrong, but this is a deep, deep team. So if they're struggling, well, then maybe kind of have to think about, you know, well, let's go with the other option. Let him get more batting practice on the side or something.
Yeah, you're right. It could cost someone. And then because these teams need to win right away, they didn't expand the postseason. Even a good team like the Yankees, they can't fall too far behind.
Right.
I mean, for example, I mean, the Yankees are one of the better teams in baseball, but if the Rays beat them out, then they're counting on one of those two wildcard spots. And we see, for example, the Central Division having a pretty weak schedule. There's some decent teams out west beyond Houston. You know, you're right. If some players, especially if the slow start is traceable, if they're like, well, let's DJ did miss a lot of time, you know, during our camp, well, he had COVID. So yeah, let's sit him out and just give him extra practice, but we can't afford to waste at bats.
Right. And yeah. It, you know, if you're a wild card, it's still a play-in game. It's still one game. They didn't change the playoffs this year.
That's right. And I mean, we all think that the Yankees would probably beat, say, the Indians or the Angels or some of the A's in a one game, but poof, who knows? And, you know, I mean, if everything works out and the Yankees are at home and they got Gerrit Cole going and everything else, they probably a pretty good bet to win, but you don't want to get in that situation if you can avoid it.
Yeah, that's right. Let's talk about some of the other news items. Eduardo Rodriguez is one of the players that has tested positive, tested positive for the Red Sox. You know, he was supposed to be their, you know, he was supposed to be their opening day starter on a pretty weak rotation, rotation that's already weak to begin with. I got to say, you know, I really want to get my, I want to try to stack hitters against the Red Sox this year.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good plan. I don't know how the Red Sox are going to do this year. I said, you know, many times on here back in February that it felt like they were just kind of killing time in 2020. Well, they did a quick regroup, not a full rebuild like a lower budget team would do, but a quick regroup. And now, I don't know, it just feels more and more like that all the time. So, yeah, I think this is definitely a team where, you know, when you see your hitters are going into Boston, you know, Boston could be the scene of a lot of 9-7 games this season.
Yes, yes.
Really, yeah, and as far as Rodriguez himself goes, like, you know, I'm going to downgrade him. I'm trying to kind of watch the news with these various players to see if they are ill or if they're asymptomatic. Like, again, we're just kind of navigating this all on the fly, but I'm going to be watching for Rodriguez to see, like, if he's asymptomatic and he's just kind of resting, maybe even doing some throwing on his own, like isolated, not with the team. I'll downgrade him a little bit, you know, shorter outings at the beginning, things like that. If I find out that he's ill, like Freddie Freeman apparently is, I would downgrade him a bigger percentage, because I would assume, not having had COVID, but I would assume if you're ill, it's going to take you a little while to get back to full strength once you're feeling better.
Right. So my rule of thumb is I start off any player that tests positive, I downgrade him 10%. In terms of playing time. And then I adjust accordingly. You know, if Nola's back, okay, I bump him back up. Freeman, it looks like he's actually sick. Maybe you downgrade him a little bit more. You know, and I think I'm more likely to downgrade a pitcher than I am a hitter. Just because that, you know, 2 weeks right now for a pitcher and ramp up time is huge. You know, it's almost no way that they're going to be able to pitch in games if they're not working out over 2 weeks. Now, we don't know for sure they're going to sit out 2 weeks after these tests. That's some of the thing is we don't know when the actual positive test was.
No, that's very true. Yeah. And I mean, they don't have to necessarily not pitch. They just can't be around the team. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would think they're probably not pitching, but I don't know. Like, it just depends where they have these guys when they're, you know, when they're being isolated. While they're being isolated, are they somewhere, you know, are they at home? And if they're at home, depending on what their house is like, could they actually throw while they're at home? I'm downgrading them more than 10% right off the top. And I'm probably not moving them back up. Like, I'm probably downgrading them a good 15% off the top, all of these players, just for the unknown of it. Just because there's so, I mean, if we're talking about position players, we've talked a lot about how there's so many good hitters out there. There's so many power hitters. I'm just downgrading them about 15% off the top. And then if I find out they're ill, then I'm probably downgrading them a little bit more. I just, in a short season, I just don't want to play around with, I would feel, I don't know, I just feel like it's an unnecessary risk to take anyone like Freeman or Charlie Blackmon anywhere close to full value. And then right. They get off to a really slow start in a 60-game season. And then I'm kind of smacking my own forehead saying, well, what were you expecting? You know, they were sick. Like, why did you take them anywhere close? Like, I want a significant discount.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you for sure. And I think that, yeah, I get that. I am also, one of the things I'm doing is I am downgrading confirmed positives. I'm not downgrading away from the team guys yet, because sometimes it's just, oh, they were around someone you know, that was positive. Yeah. We're just going to hold him out a couple of days. A couple of days, I mean, it's not insignificant, but I can live with that. But if it's definitely, you know, definite positive test, that's different.
That's right. And I kind of feel like as far as away from the team goes, you know, we have to kind of wait and see, I think, in the next few days. Like if you're still away from the team next week, then the downgrade's coming. Like if we're talking next week about someone who's still away from the team, the downgrade's coming. I think it was it Gallegos with Cardinals? I think he's still away from the team, but hasn't been, as far as I know, there's no news of a positive test. So I don't know why he's away from the team. No idea. It could be a visa issue, could be a family issue, could be a COVID issue. I have no idea. So like I haven't downgraded him yet, but if he's not back with the team, I'd say by the end of this week, like here comes a bit of a downgrade. And then I'll just keep working to downgrade him further the more days he misses.
Right. Well, and the news is still coming with that, though. Like Juan Soto is away from the team, and it's because someone, he was in contact with someone who did test positive, you know, but that just happened today. Like I just saw that note this morning. I'm like, oh, great. You know, that's the sort of thing. There hasn't been any indication he's tested positive. Tyler Glasnow has been away from the team this whole time. I don't know why, you know, and you know, they haven't announced that. And you know, that's time. I think I have to downgrade him now. Jesus Luzardo is away from the team right now. Mike Fiers returned today, but Luzardo did not. And there was a nebulous note from Bob Melvin saying that they're going to, you sent it to me, like from Susan Slosser, saying it'll affect the rotation. What does that mean?
Yeah, you'd assume that means he's not going to be part of it at the beginning of the season. I don't, that'd just be my assumption. But yeah, this is the big challenge, I think, for us in the next few weeks, is just keeping track of all these situations. I think they're going to be coming a mile a minute. The information they're giving us is not totally clear out of respect for players' privacy, which I understand. And then on top of this, we have certain teams that weren't even practicing yesterday because they couldn't get their testing back. Right. So they weren't even sure if they were really felt safe practicing when they didn't. What's the point of taking the test if you haven't got the results back? So it's hard to downgrade players who aren't with the team yet when there are full teams who aren't practicing. But I'd say for me, it's kind of, my cutoff is probably about Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Like if by this weekend you're not with the team and the team's fully practicing and you're not there, then it's time for a downgrade. And I think it does have to go a little bit, as you mentioned already, into positions and maybe even just the type of player you are. Like Tyler Glasnow is as volatile of a pitching stock as you can possibly get. Like he's looked really good briefly last season for the first time after a lot of teasing, but it was really brief. You know, if I said to you Tyler Glasnow was going to make 3-inning starts for his first 3 or 4 starts of the season, I don't think either one of us would be surprised. At the same time, if he was really, really good out of the gate, I don't think we'd be surprised either.
Yeah, yeah. I downgrade. I made an executive decision. I treated him as you know, it's been 5 days, and he's still not with the team. Yeah. To me, that's a downgrade now, because he's a starting pitcher, and because the Rays have so much depth.
Yes, absolutely, and depth through the entire pitching staff, where, like, not even just starting pitcher depth, like depth where they can do anything with them. They could just put them on the IL to start the year, let them build up, or depth where they can, like I said before, have them make 3-inning starts, 2-inning starts at the beginning of the year, 2 innings, maybe then 3 innings, then 4 innings, if that's what they have to do.
Right. And of those that we talked about, I downgraded Luzardo also. Same thing.
Same.
And Gallegos too. And Gallegos, it's a role thing too. Here's the thing about the Cardinals. Say Gallegos doesn't report until the 20th, you know, and then he starts ramping up. Then what do you do? Is it maybe, okay, Carlos Martinez, you're now our closer. I know you wanted to be a starter, or you were working out as a starter, but we need you to close right now. Or do they go with Ryan Helsley. Or do they go, you know, Ponce de Leon or Gantz? They have options. And then that ensures that Kwang Hyun Kim gets a start in the rotation as opposed to a long reliever role.
Yeah, for sure. I think Gallegos too. Yeah, Gallegos having virtually no closer experience is definitely a negative here. You know, if someone like Craig Kimbrell was behind a little bit, well, you know, once he's ready to go, even if
how'd that work out last year?
Yeah. Well, when I say, I mean a little bit behind, not 3 months behind, right. 4 months behind, but no, but someone with some closing experience, even someone like a Brad Hand or someone like that, like,
right.
If they were a little behind because they're late getting to the team and they don't get the first save chance, like that's a downgrade for sure. But you know that Brad Hand's going to go back to being the Indians closer right away. Gallegos, you're right. There's a lot. He hasn't been their closer. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of ways that could go and he could end up. Yeah, just maybe never getting his chance.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, and yeah, that looked, who do you like in that Cardinals pen, by the way? Do you, you know, say it isn't Gallegos. Who would you think is going to be the closer there?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really have a good feel. Like, I don't know if they could go to Jordan Hicks, like, as soon as he's back. Like, if Jordan Hicks could come back, like, I'm hearing early August is a possibility.
Right.
I could see just a bullpen by committee, and then he slowly is their closer maybe by September. I do like Gallegos. That's the thing that is tough with him as a pitcher. Like, I do really like Gallegos. Is there someone else who you like... like that you like other than that? I don't know. Hicks to me, just because Hicks was kind of motoring along just fine as the closer before he was injured.
Yeah. I'm skeptical about Hicks, but
yeah.
Then again, I, you know, he was a guy that was on my no fly list in March. Now I have to consider him, you know, and that, you know, I want things to be easy. That's definitely not easy.
That's right. I just think, yeah, I mean, I guess he could be a dice roll at the end of a draft, especially if you have an unlimited IL slots. Gallegos is interesting, though. Like, he is becoming less attractive in the sense of just in a long season, I would just take him probably and assume that the skills will take over. In a short season, like, I just don't have time for that. Like, I need like five or six, at least like five or six saves before September, maybe even seven or eight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And so that's why I'm just... you know, and I'm also structuring my draft. So at least I did in the first one that I have two closers early, that I'm not playing that game. I, you know, Todd's opposite of me. He is willing to try to stream closers. He's going to like take some more chances there, try to build, like he wants to build some starters because he thinks finding those innings from those starters is going to be exceedingly difficult. So two different ways to build a team.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. So did you feel like in your first draft, were the closers being pushed up? Because that's the sense that I'm getting from people, not from people who have drafted, just from people kind of throwing out their ideas for drafting, period, is that, you know, it's shortened season. You know, we don't know what's going to happen with all these starters. Push the closers up. Closers are going to keep their jobs because it's a shorter time. Just go ahead and get the current closers. Did you feel like closers were getting pushed up?
Oh, absolutely they were.
Yeah.
And I was part of that. You know, it was part of my plan. Normally in a 12-teamer, I'll only get one closer in the first 10 rounds. I wanted to get closers from the top two tiers. And that, I mean, you know, and one closer from each of the tiers. Well, I view them as two tiers. Maybe it's three if you want to kind of be more precise. But I wanted to get two closers relatively early. So I got a closer in the sixth round, Aroldis Chapman. He was the closer number six, by the way, at 6.7. Wow. So that kind of tells you where closers are going. And then... I got Ken Giles two rounds later at 8.7. So I think he was closer 12.
I'll say one good thing and one bad thing about your closer. So Aroldis Chapman actually right now is my number two closer. It bothers me in a 162 game season that he never gets the 40 saves. It just always seems to get paced out a little bit and doesn't get the 40 saves. But I think in a shorter season, he could lead the majors in saves. The Yankees would be among the strongest candidates to have their closer lead the majors in saves. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of bumped him ahead of Kirby Yates just because I think the Yankees will win a significant more games than the Padres. And maybe Chapman can handle that workload for just 2 months. So I love Chapman. I don't love Giles because as a Blue Jays fan, I just think that they're not going to be able to hang around in that tough East. And then they're going to trade him at the end of August. But for your sake, I hope he gets traded to a closer's role.
Yeah. I think they'll hang around enough. And sometimes, you know, teams like that, they may not win as many games, but the wins they do have are all close games. It's kind of like Yates last year. You know, the Padres weren't a great team, but they had a lot of, you know, save situations. And whenever they won, it was a save chance. I think the offense will be better for the Jays this year. That starting pitching could be hideous, though.
It's possible. I really feel like so – obviously when the schedules came out, and we'll talk about this a little more in detail later, but when the schedules came out as a Blue Jays fan, that's the one I looked at first. Mm-hmm. I believe I saw a stat last night that the Blue Jays, if you're looking at last season's winning percentage, they have the hardest first 2 weeks of any team. And then I know that down the stretch, they basically play the Yankees all the time. Like they play the Yankees, the Yankees are like literally like half of their last 20 games are like, so they don't play the Yankees until September. And the Yankees are literally like half of their last 20 games of the 10 against the Yankees. So when I looked at that schedule, I was just like, oh, I just don't think this team is ready to like just the start of the schedule was Tampa and then four games against Washington. And then it didn't really have a break after that. It was like the Phillies who are pretty solid after that. And I can't remember if the Braves were next or something, but like there are not a lot of easy games in there for them.
Yeah. Well, I think that's true. That's definitely true. Like in the East as a whole.
Yes.
So the mid-tier NL team, I mean, Eastern teams, the Jays, or bottom tier, and Marlins and Orioles, they're going to get ground in a lot. Maybe the Mets, too. We'll see. I think the Mets are okay, but we'll see. And we'll see what the Phillies have. I mean, they seem like they're getting people back now, although they might lose Zach Wheeler. That's another one. He might not come back after his child is born. He might take 2 weeks to come back. That's going to be a tricky one.
Yeah, so knowing that, like, where do you draft Zach Wheeler? Like what would you be comfortable with him in your pit? Let's say, I think round isn't quite matter. Well, sorry, like pick overall or something doesn't quite matter. For example, 15 team or 12 team, like where would you be comfortable with Zach Wheeler in your pitching staff? Like as your fourth, fifth, like what would you be comfortable with knowing that he may just not come back after that?
And factor in the NL factor, you know, the fact that, you know, they're facing a DH. So all of a sudden, what the value you thought you had in him is gone, is dissipated a little bit. SP5, I guess. I'm probably not getting him. I guess is the real answer. But prior to the restart, I had him as a pretty decent ratio guy, 121 WHIP, 353 ERA. But that's going to change. That's going to go. Both are going to go up. Add it, and then you take away starts. I'll try to find somebody else.
Yeah, I feel like that too. I feel like, some starts are going to get missed, and there's a chance that he just doesn't come back. Now, I will say the good thing if he doesn't come back is at least you know. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll leave, the baby will be born, he'll say he's not coming back, you cut him, you've got your roster spot back. Like, I'd rather that almost than with certain players. We're going to have situations that we're going to have to talk about a lot where someone pulls a hamstring, and they're going to miss 3 to 6 weeks and there's 7 weeks left, you know, and we're going to have to decide, like, do you hold them and hope that they come back in three, or do you cut them? Like, at least with Wheeler, it'll be cut and dried and you can just let him go. But I kind of feel the same way as you. I think he's like your fifth starter or something like that. I don't think I just don't think that, like, we're not talking about Justin Verlander. I don't think the upside is enough to gamble on him.
I agree with that. So would you take Matthew Boyd or Zach Wheeler?
Oh, Matt Boyd, like, by a mile.
I agree. Sean Manaea or Zach Wheeler?
Oh, I guess I'll take Sean Manaea. I'm not a big Sean Manaea guy. I take Mike Fiers. I might take Zach Wheeler now. I probably take just guys that we were talking about on the A's. I think I'd take Zach Wheeler over Mike Fiers and take.
But that's kind of the line, isn't it? And that's nowhere near where the line used to be.
Yeah. How about this? His former teammate, Steven Matz. Who would you rather have?
I think Matz, but man, I think so too. I happen to like Matz. That's part of it. Although yeah. I like him less than I used to.
I think once we get down to like some guys I have around Matz on my rankings, Chase Anderson, Fiers, Brad Keller, Josh Lindblom, Jordan Lyles, I think I might take Wheeler over all of those guys and just take a chance because mm-hmm. I feel like those pitchers are like pretty like, I think I could probably work waivers and find something similar to that. But if we go up a tier and we're looking at Mike Soroka, Dallas Keuchel, things like that, I think I would just take those guys over.
Right.
Over Zach Wheeler.
Give me Dylan Bundy over Wheeler.
Yep.
Maybe Ross Stripling over Wheeler or Aaron Civale over Wheeler too. That's kind of the area I'm at.
So yeah, I would say yes to Ross Stripling. I want to see what they're doing with Civale, because I know they optioned him, but I know that was just a procedural move. But
that was just a save money, as they're a bunch of scoundrels. Absolutely. But
absolutely. So, but I just want to make sure he's in the rotation. I'd probably take Wheeler over him right now just for that. If I found out Civale was in the rotation, then I think I might go the other way.
I'd take Lance McCullers over him too.
Oh, by a lot. I'm starting to dig Lance McCullers a little bit. I don't think I'll be the guy who gets him, but you know, why can't he have the same workload as any other pitcher at the start of the season? And we know that a good Lance McCullers is a pretty good pitcher. And the more I break down the schedule, there's a lot of good ballparks out west to pitch him.
Yeah, there is. And I love the quote from Dusty Baker. Is like, you know, he's probably ahead of everyone right now on the Astros, because he was, you know, working hard as rehab. You know, he was like, I am not going to be limited in my workload. I'll show you and all that. And I was like, oh, OK, I like it.
I think he can take every fifth turn, make his 12 starts, average five innings per start, you know, maybe even 5.5. To six innings per start. Like, I think he could throw, if he makes his 12 starts, I think he can throw over 60 innings. And that is, like Lance McCullers in 60 innings can get you, you know, 65 to 70 strikeouts. And Houston's a good team. He could win his fair share of games.
Andrew Heaney or Zach Wheeler?
Oh, Andrew Heaney by a lot. I'm kind of digging Andrew Heaney too. Yeah, I like the strikeout potential of Heaney. I worry about the six man rotation. I would have a Heaney McCullers debate in my head. I think I would take McCullers, but that would be a debate in my head. I like Andrew Heaney, and it's the six man rotation that's holding me back on him. But I've actually looked at the Angels schedule too, and he's their opening day starter. So he's one of the guys who you can project right now. You should be able, if you're assuming they do the six man rotation with Ohtani, you know, you can project him out every sixth game. It's a pretty decent schedule to start. And like I had said a minute ago, you start realizing it's just, there's one thing to think about the schedules on a, like a general level, but now that they're out and you can look at them and you start realizing like, oh, that park's not bad. Oh, that park's not bad. Oh, that park's not bad. And you start realizing with Heaney, you're like, oh, he's home. He's in Oakland. Oh, he's in Seattle. Oh, he's back home. Oh, he's in San Francisco. That's good. Mm-hmm. And you realize there's a lot of favorable situations out there. So I don't know if I'll have Andrew Heaney. I don't have him in any teams yet, but I think I could.
Yeah, the ratio worries me a little bit.
Yeah, my biggest concern with Heaney's always been the injuries, but this is the season where I'm willing to roll the dice on players like Heaney if they're healthy when the season starts, and just hope that we get 2 months, or if I even get 6 weeks, like I'll figure out the last 2 or 3 weeks. Like, I can just figure that out. But
what sort of ERA did you project for Heaney?
Low fours. Like 4.2 ish, like low fours, and then a whip somewhere in the like 1.23, 1.24, 1.25 type range. What do you think of that?
See, I was at whip, I'm with you. ERA, I was at 4.43.
Okay, so I'm a little lower than you on that.
4.91 last year.
That is, but I feel like I'd have to pull some Heaney stats up, but I feel like his batted ball luck wasn't great, or his strand rate wasn't great. One of those last year. And I feel like he could have been, I feel like there's some potential for him still to improve with his ERA. I'll see what I can get.
Yeah,
for
you. And you might be right. Look that up, because I noticed I've been consistently lower than the pack on him, and I wonder what I'm missing. So I can always look at our write up on him.
He's 29 years old. If you asked me how old Andrew Heaney was, I would have said a lot younger than 29.
Yeah. Well, he missed time. Remember,
yeah.
He's another TGS guy.
Yeah.
So there's that. I thought that he's a tricky one. A couple of non-COVID news notes. Edwin Diaz isn't guaranteed the job. This was in response to a question. So it wasn't like Rojas came out outright and said, hey, I've got an announcement to make. He's not guaranteed to be our closer. No, they kind of asked him, has he got the closer job back? And he's kind of, basically is like, well, he's kind of got to earn it, is the way I interpreted that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to think he gets the first save chances. I would interpret that as he's getting the first save chances, but his leash isn't that long on that closer's role. Do you think that's probably accurate? I mean, with his contract, they've got to give him another shot at being closer, right?
Yeah, although that contract's a sunk cost. You know, if he's, you know, he's going to get paid it regardless of how good he is. and it's not like the NFL. These are guaranteed contracts. So, you know, you can look at it as, yeah, and also the player cost it took to get him too, trading away Kelenic. You know, that's one that Mets fans hate to hear all the time, but you know, that might encourage them to give him more chances. It's a new manager too. I mean, I think that actually skews in favor of Diaz. I think he needed the fresh start, but yeah, we'll see. They are deep in that bullpen now, though.
For sure. I just look at, 2018 was not too long ago, and he had 57 saves and a 1.96 ERA. Yeah. Like I just think that they've got to give him another, like, not even a look. Like, they've got to give him, how about this? If Edwin Diaz came out this year and wasn't good and lost the role, if I was the Mets, I would still probably give him at least a look, like next year in spring training. Just again, like you said, with how much they gave up to get him, you know, even with a different manager, I think he gets the first chance. But yeah, I do think that his, you know, his leash on that job is shorter than a lot of other closers.
Yeah, I think so too.
And they're feeling that pressure cooker in the East too. The Mets know their margin for error to make the postseason this year is really small, especially their Syndergaard.
Right. That's right. And who knows what they're going to get out of Cespedes. Where are you on Cespedes?
Totally out.
Totally out.
Yeah. Like, I'd draft him in an NL only. I don't think I would draft him in a mixed league, would you?
I think I'm more inclined to take him in a mixed league than an NL only, because if it doesn't work out, I can replace him easier. Or an NL only, you're kind of, you know.
I guess if I have him ranked so low that I wouldn't take him in a mixed league, I just won't be the guy who gets him in an NL only. You're not getting him for $2 or something in an, or a dollar or something in an NL only. But we talked a little bit about this last week, but one thing that's happened since Cespedes basically stopped playing early in 2018 is his skill sets become so much more plentiful. So I think if I want just a late round power hitting outfielder, Cespedes isn't going to steal bases. He's not like, I mean, batting averages can be whatever they are in a short season, but he's probably not going to be a high average hitter. He's probably going to be more like a 260 hitter. I think I can just chase someone else late round. Well, like, I could probably just get Cole Calhoun in a late round, for example, who hit for plenty of power last year and can hit for a low batting average and steal like one base, which is kind of what I think Cespedes is going to do.
Of course, you're not going to take Cole Calhoun because he's a positive tester, too.
Yeah, well, if no one else wants him, maybe I'll take him really late. I can jump back to Andrew Heaney for a second, tell you. So if you want to compare what we've said to just some of those Fangraphs type projections, the bat has him at a 4.00 ERA. Wow. Steamer has 3.96 and Zips has 4.13. They have the five projection systems on Fangraphs. None of them are higher than 4.13, which I'm surprised about that.
It's so funny because often I'm more bullish on players than these systems, but yet
I know, me too.
I kind of tend to think, and that I'll say this, this is in praise of them. They do a good job of using measures other than simply what his ERA has been in the past, that there are other measures that indicate that, whether it's expected to, you know, whether it's a measure of strikeouts and walks, or slugging against, you know, and weight, WOBA, and whatever stat their inputs are, they're more granular than just looking at previous year's ERA. So I get that. Yeah. And that's a good thing.
I was going to say, looking at him from last year, he just got killed by the home runs. I mean, even more than most pitchers did. Like, his home run per nine innings was 1.89, which is just, like, that's tough to overcome. The strikeout rate's great. Like, it was 11.14 last year. And the walk rate's good, 2.83. Like, you can have a strikeout rate of 11 and a walk rate below 3. Like, that's really good. He's just got to get those home runs, either better luck or get the home runs just under control even a little bit. And maybe the parks will help with him staying on the West Coast.
Do you think the ball will be less lively this year? Do you think more of these pitchers will, quote unquote, get home runs under control?
No. No, I think I fall in the masses on this one, where I feel like the ball will be just as lively, because why would they change the ball? Unless they had already planned on changing the ball and they have just crates and crates of balls that were going to be changed. But I think the ball is going to be just as lively. And maybe some of this is just me having watched that Maguire Sosa for 30 for 30 that we just 30 for 30 that we just talked about a few weeks ago. Yeah. And baseball is probably like, hey, maybe in a cleaner way, we can repeat history by keeping the game popular this summer by having lots of home runs.
I think the ball was juiced then too, by the way.
It might have been. It very well might have been.
Yeah. So, yeah, I tend to think, especially because they're trying to generate interest in this sprint season. You know, although maybe they're just willing to write it off. I don't even know how this is going to work out. Truth is, we don't know. That's the best part about it. But I do think that it's going to be interesting with Heaney, though. Maybe I'll give him a little bit of a more optimistic projection. Maybe I'm being persuaded just a little bit there. Nate Lowe has getting taking grounders at third base for the race in this training camp. He's looking okay. He still has a ways to go, according to Kevin Cash. But this might be a way to kind of get him more playing time against a right-handed pitcher, at least.
Yep, it's possible. But like, so my first reaction to that is completely negative. I'm just like, oh, this is why I don't want to draft Rays.
Yeah.
But like other than the best ones, because other than the pitchers, because okay, Nate Lowe is getting some reps at third base, so that further muddies up the infield. We're even less sure who's going to start on a daily basis. I think that's my first takeaway from it. Do you think I'm crazy on that and I'm missing a lot of value there? But my general take is until the later rounds of my draft, I'm not interested in Rays because I think they're just going to drive me nuts from one week to the next, the hitters will.
Yeah. For the most part, I think that's true. I want Brandon Lau in some leagues, but haven't found ways to get him yet. Yeah, I could see that. I can see mostly fading him. We spent some time talking about this yesterday with Brandon Lau. Todd and I did on the XM show. But you know, you're right. It is awfully difficult to want to try to entrust any of these guys and trust the organization. Smart team. It's good for them, but it's miserable for us. And it's because they platoon more than almost anybody.
That's right. And they probably have a better opportunity to platoon than ever this year. And I'm sure they've spent some time trying to figure that out along the way. Austin Meadows obviously escapes all these rules. Like he'll play every day. I'll take him if I like the value in the early rounds. But
he reports to camp, by the way, you know.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He's another not present. I haven't seen an update since Sunday on that, but I haven't heard of him. I shouldn't say he's not reporting. It's not like he's choosing to, but he's absent from workouts so far. It's another one of those guys. Don't know.
Yeah. So there's another guy. Yeah. I'll probably follow the same theory unless I hear something in the news. I'll give him till this weekend, and then at that point, I may bump him down at least just a few spots.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be there for that too. I think that's probably the way I'm going to approach that. All right, let's move on. MLB announced their schedule yesterday. You know, it was kind of team by team that they were doing this. And I'll start off, all politics are local. I'll start off with my Reds, Fred. I like their schedule. 6 games against the Tigers, only 3 against the Twins, first of all. That's pretty nice. And those 3 Twins games are the last 3 games of the season. So hopefully they've set their destiny already by then.
Wow, I did. So that one I missed. So I didn't realize that the Reds got to be rivals with the Tigers. So they get 6 Tigers games.
Yes.
I thought they would. Those would for sure be against the Indians. That would be the team they get.
I would have thought that too. Against. But I think they did it. I think they did it according to where they finished last year.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I think it's a. So that the schedule for the Reds is really good right off the top, which is. I think for fantasy owners is pretty good. Like starting Tigers and Cubs, but the Cubs aren't that scary, but starting Tigers and Cubs at home and then go to the Tigers, you know, that's a pretty good schedule off the top. And then looking even in mid-August, they have a full week of home games against the Royals and Pirates. And then after that, 2 games at the Royals. So, yeah, I think the Reds are definitely a team for fantasy purposes. Like, you want to get, like, if you want to get some of their players, I think you should be comfortable with that. And they should get off to some pretty good starts. The September schedule is like a little harder, although there's still 2 Pirates series and a home series against the White Sox in there. I think it's a pretty good schedule overall.
Yeah. I thought they did well with that schedule. With the one exception, you know, one of the things is the misconception I had was, okay, they're going to go 5-5 with their division rivals in terms of home road. That's not the case.
No.
For that, yep. For the Reds, it's 3-7. The Central, they did it 3-7. So they get 7 home games against the Pirates and the Cubs, but 7 road games against the Cardinals and the Brewers. That's not great.
No, I think that's one of the schedule breakdown, you know, quirks that I've been looking at from one team to the next, because it's not totally balanced that way. And looking at now, they're now the Reds for Parks, it's probably pretty much a wash. I guess it's not great for their pitchers because they have to go to the Brewers more. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd probably be better to go to the Pirates more. Like, it's a better park to pitch in. So overall, it's probably not maybe great for their pitchers, but it's not that bad. Yeah, I think looking at as far as park effects goes for both hitters and pitchers, you know, how many games is your team playing at, like for your 30 road games, how many of them are at, you know, hitter friendly parks? How many are pitcher friendly parks? How many are them at neutral parks? I feel like the Reds schedule is pretty hitter friendly overall.
Yeah, I think it is.
Seven road games at the Brewers, you said, like that's pretty nice for their hitters. And then 30 home games, obviously.
Right. Games at St. Louis, that's not great.
Not but, great.
You know, other than that, yeah. And, yeah, you know, take what – I think it's a, all in all, though, I'll take that schedule. Let's go through any others in the Central that caught your guy, AL or NL. Any other scheduling notices there?
Yeah, some things I noticed. A lot of people have talked about the Twins and how favorable we talked about them in a general sense before the schedule came out. Their schedule, when you look at it now, that it's funny just seeing them live, the schedule, like in full detail, is gave me a different impression a little bit than just the concept right. of them. Because now I'm actually planning out like a pitching staff or using a hitter or benching them and looking at the weeks. The Twins, I noticed from August 3rd to 23rd, the Twins played, which is pretty early, basically, you know, about a week and a half into the season. The Twins play in that stretch 20 games in 21 days. 14 are against the Royals and the Pirates. So the Twins should, from a winning, for if you're looking at rostering some Twins pitchers, like they should get off to a really good start, which I think is all you can really worry about in this short season. And if you have to patch some things together in September, then that's what you have to do. Whereas the Indians, for example, they have the same thing, but at the end, their September schedule is really easy. You know, they have a lot of games against the Tigers, Royals, and Pirates. Their harder stretch is getting to September. I think just knowing those two things, if I was 50-50 on a player between the Twins and the Indians, I'd probably rather have the Twins player. That probably will never happen in a draft, but just those two teams. But if it did, I'd probably rather have the Twins player, and I'll take the early game, the easy games early, and figure out the rest later.
Yeah, that's right. Other thing I noticed is there was a lot of stuff going around about travel distances yesterday. And, you know, all the West teams have a lot more travel to do, and the Central teams have the least amount. The two Texas teams in particular really have a lot more travel than everybody else.
Yeah, so I heard about that yesterday and I read about it. Do you think that's a big deal in the sense of in any season the West teams travel more? Like, that just is what it is. And I would assume in a 2-month season the effects of having to travel a lot aren't going to catch up to you to the same degree that they would in a 6-month season. So I felt like the travel is not necessarily that big a deal. I also thought about the fact that if these players are behaving themselves and trying to stay COVID free, there's almost not much else to do. Like, I don't know if these East Coast teams need 1-hour flights and then a long time in a city, because they shouldn't really be going out in a lot of these cities right now too much. If they're trying to stay on the field, they probably shouldn't be doing that anyways.
I'll give you the counter arguments.
Yeah.
One, I think there'll be fewer off days. So
right.
I think that's one thing that will hurt them a little bit more. And there's just less recovery time. If you're doing long trips, you're getting in the morning, you may not get good sleep, you're worn down a little bit more. Two, if you're worn down a little bit more, maybe you're more susceptible to illnesses. And that's, you know, something that is, you would think is normally a problem, but in this unique environment, way worse.
No, that's very true. Does any of this concern have you wanting to trend younger with your teams? Like the travel concern, say out West especially, wanting to trend younger, just figuring those younger bodies can maybe better handle these longer flights and just recovering from them and this tight schedule?
I've been kind of going the opposite, looking for veterans that are going to play more. I've just been craving the playing time.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting consideration for sure. But maybe the veterans are more likely to stay in and let not expose themselves to
have a little more common sense. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see about that. We're all speculating though. Like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, we're just guessing on that. you talked about one thing in the West, and this is probably should be the first thing you look at, is who gets trips to Coors Field more? It's the Giants and the Padres, which were, for the most part, we're fading Giants pitchers, period. I can't even think of a Giants pitcher that I have right now. I know I might have one in some league, but for the most part, I don't think I have any Giants starters. I might have a Tyler Rogers league or two where I have him rostered, but I don't have any Cueto. I don't have any Samardzija. I've missed out on Gausman. I don't really have any Drew Smyly or Logan Webb. No, full fade on Giants pitchers, so that's actually good. San Diego pitchers, I have Paddock in a couple of keeper leagues, but I feel like Denelson Lamed has been priced too high, and that's before the NL downgrade, but I haven't been the guy that's taking Garrett Richards, although I see the motivation for doing so. It's not going to affect me as much.
Yeah, the good news from the pitching side with the Padres. So my first thought was Chris Paddock, because he's the one who requires, the big investment. The good thing I can say is that if they stay on schedule, and they should, so the Padres start on the 24th, and what they should have, they hit the Rockies for the first time, they go there on the 31st. That should be their 3, 4, and 5 starters. So Paddock should get in a home game against Arizona and a road game against the Giants, and then miss the Rocky series, and then have a couple starts the following week at home against the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. So Paddock at least. So I'm not going to downgrade Paddock because it looks like he'll probably have to pitch at Coors. I'm not going to get into the one that's at the end of August, beginning of September. I think it's too far away to try to project work, and it's a 4-gamer. I'm just going to assume he's pitching in that series, but he does miss. It looks like he's going to miss that first series in Coors. So more, I think that it's just a nice little bonus for the hitters on San Diego, for Tatis and some of those hitters, Machado, maybe that helps them get off to a bit of a good start. Although, as I mentioned, I do find when I'm breaking down the schedule, there's just we don't know how the new Texas stadium is going to play. And there's just but overall in the West, there's just a lot of parks that are either neutral or pitcher friendly, but I guess there always have been, but now those teams are isolated out there. So I'm not downgrading. Like you said, the Giants pitchers, forget it. You weren't taking them anyways, or you're taking them in the reserve rounds or something as a dice roll. No big investment. Paddock, I'm not downgrading. I'm not going to downgrade Kirby Yates or something because of an extra couple games in Coors Field for his team. I think it's a nice boom for the hitters, but I do think it's also a nice little boom for the Diamondbacks and Dodgers pitchers, because some of those guys may not have to pitch at Coors at all.
That's right. What's the bigger motivation for fading? Coors Field or facing the Dodgers in extra time?
That's a good call.
It's relevant for Paddock. Paddock got hit pretty hard by the Dodgers.
Yeah, no, it's true. And he probably will face the Dodgers at least a couple times. I still probably fear Coors. I still think I probably fear Coors more than anything else. What about you?
I think so, but it's enough to give me cause for pause, especially because, they're going shorter probably, or at least those first couple times out. But although then again, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe maybe one of the things about this season is it's going to force teams against their will to optimally use their starters.
That's right. Yes. No, you're right. They may have to, they have to do whatever they can do. I do think now too, that the teams are getting in camps. I'm hearing quotes from managers and players, about a sense of urgency and a sense of competitiveness towards the season, which I think is really good to hear. And I'm hearing, I heard Joe Maddon talk about playing small ball, and we were worried about teams stealing bases. Like, I heard him talking about playing small ball to get every win he can possibly get. And I think sometimes the way they'll manage their pitchers could be frustrating for fantasy owners to try to get every win they can get. But I am totally here for a scenario where each manager comes to the ballpark each day for 60 games saying, I need to get a win today. And I mean, a few of them will drop out. Teams will drop out by game 30, 40, 50, whatever, depending on which team they are. But I'm interested in managers, managing the game more aggressively, both in terms of substitutions and in terms of style of play, to try to get every win they can.
Yeah, I like that. I like that mentality there. Torey Lovullo was one of those managers that acknowledged that he's going to be less patient. You know, he's going to have to think about the short run more than the long run, especially because Arizona has some aspirations for the playoffs this year. That they were a team that was, you know, I almost wonder if they're one of those teams that could come back down to earth a little bit after surging last year, or if instead they're going to take the next step. You know, I you know, it kind of depends on whether they're pitching, basically.
Yes, absolutely. And I think they are a team that, to me, I think that could take that next. Well, they could, whether they take a next step, I think they're a team that in a really tight schedule could find their way into the postseason. I think that maybe the East teams just kind of grind each other and end up kind of all bunched in the middle, you know, and maybe there's an opportunity for a wild card spot to come out of the West. Yeah. I also saw that cool stat. I don't know if you saw it too, but that it, what was it, 7 years in a row, the Dodgers won their division. Only 2 out of the 7 years were they leading their division after 60 games. So, I mean, I guess it's not a foregone conclusion that the Dodgers will win the West.
No.
It's... I do know it's a little apples and oranges. Like when the Dodgers weren't winning the division after 60 games, they weren't panicking. They weren't, you know what I mean? Like they weren't panicking. They weren't managing in such a way where they knew they had to be winning after 60 games.
Right.
So it'll be a little different this time, but it is a good reminder that, hey, maybe the Diamondbacks, Padres, someone like that could actually be ahead of the Dodgers after 60 games.
Yeah. I think though it was last year they were 41-19 though after 60, which is also pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. You alluded to it with the Jays, but the schedule for like the Jays, the Orioles, the Marlins, the Mets is brutal.
It is. Like there's just not a lot of free lunches out there in the East, especially if you are one of the few free lunches. Like the Orioles are the team that everyone's checking their schedule saying, hey, when do we get the Orioles? So if you are the Orioles, you don't get the Orioles. There's not much left for players on those teams. It's really soured me, I think, on trying to, I mean, not that the Orioles don't have much to offer on a pitching side. The Blue Jays do have some interesting arms, like, well, Hyunjin Ryu's there, right? Like they do have Matt Shoemaker, when he's healthy, is totally a useful fantasy pitcher who just never seems to be able to stay healthy. But if he's healthy, I'm interested. If Nate Pearson gets called up, which I'm starting to get skeptical on. And then the Marlins have a lot of young, interesting arms. It's kind of made me sour on them. I just feel like week to week when we start managing our rosters, we're going to be looking at the schedule for those teams and thinking, oh, I don't want that matchup. Oh, I don't want that matchup. I'll find someone else. You know, you draft you draft one of the Marlins pitchers, Lopez or Smith or someone like that. And you're like, okay, well maybe I'll use them sometimes. And I feel like as the weeks go along, you're going to be like, well, I don't really want to use them this week. I don't really want to use them next week. And that makes me maybe less likely to chase any of those guys in the late rounds.
Sandy Alcantara was my guy. And now I have to push them down. John Means, I thought had some value previously. Now I'm much lower on him too.
Yeah, it's just so many uphill battles for them. I think you'd just be better to speculate on a pitcher in the Central. Like by the time you're drafting Alcantara or Means, like you're in round 20 something, I think you maybe are just better to just grab someone in the Central. You just grab Aaron Civale, for example, who we already talked about. Yep. You just grab him instead. You know, you just grab a Dustin May or someone like that at West, just because if he's in the rotation, you'll like the matchups better.
Yeah, I think that's all right. Lots of Central and West. That's kind of how I drafted in my draft on Thursday night. My starters in that league, well, Flaherty, because I have a brand to, you know, maintain. But
yeah,
Giolito. Yep. Let's see, Hendricks, another branding mechanism there. Mike Minor, Rich Hill, Dylan Bundy, Pomerant. Oh wait, no, that's a J-Hap. There's my first East starter. Fires and Turnbull. Yeah, and I added Lugo and Pomerantz as non-closing relievers too. So, you know, I think that's so. Basically, it's except for closers, I pretty much avoided the East for any of my, you know, starters. Hap is a streamer. That's about it.
And Hap, like, I don't mind Hap because Hap's someone who, because he pitches on one of the best teams in the East. Mm-hmm. Like he's not going to be waging an uphill battle. He might have some tough matchups where you look at like, oh, he's got the Braves this week. Well, they're a good team. Well, the Braves are still manageable for a starting pitcher, and he has the support where if he pitches well, he can beat the Braves. It's the uphill battles, I think, that I'm trying to avoid. The pitcher who you look at his starts and you're like, hey, Alcantara actually has the worst team in every single start this season, which is totally possible. He may have the worst team in every start he makes.
Yeah. If he doesn't get to face the Orioles, I think you're right.
That's right. He could be like a decidedly worse team. So I think like I'm okay with Hap because if Hap's pitching decent, he has the bullpen, he has the offense to help him out. Going back to like someone like Alcantara, like for example, if I was in a late round, I just looking at my list, my rankings right now, I have John Lester a little bit lower than him. I don't get excited about John Lester anymore in any way, but I may rather just take him and just feel like maybe there'll be some weeks if I need a last starter where I'd stream John Lester, where I'll think the matchup's decent.
Right.
Would you take, Alcantara, or would you take John Lester?
Can I take a reliever instead?
You could take just like a setup. I'm not giving you a closer at this point.
I'll take Alcantara over Lester. I think that's my line. I happen to be pretty low on Lester though too. I mean, and the thing is, I could be completely wrong. He could be one of those boring veteran resurgence guys, but I kind of view Lester, he's on the Jake Arrieta path and he's just not coming back.
Yeah. I don't think Lester is going to be good at all. I just felt like maybe I could stream him like four or the 9 or 10 weeks or whatever, something like sure. that. Like maybe there'll be a Royals week, a Pirates week, you know, stuff like that where I'll give him a shot. That was more my thinking, but yeah, I don't, maybe you just take Seth Lugo instead of both of them or someone like that, you know, one of those reliever types.
Yeah. I think that's the play. And I almost kind of regret not taking one more of those reliever types than I did. But we'll see. And just because I think those early weeks, those guys have a lot of value. You're not going to miss that. You're going to miss like one inning and you'll get far better ratios and you might even match the Ks and possibly even wins.
Yeah. That being said, I'm assuming you have a fab run before the season starts. So you can grab one and it's a 12 team. So there are going to be some guys who would be respectable, you know, set up men on waivers. So I'm sure if you look at your staff for the first week and think, which will be a partial week, we haven't even got into that. We can do that a different week. But when you look at your staff for the first week, you're not going to be able to find enough starters. So if you have some relievers for that first partial week, the Thursday or Wednesday or whatever it is through Sunday, you're going to want to get as many relievers in your lineup as you can, because you're probably not going to be able to find six starters that you'll have on your roster who get a start that week, because it's just going to be three or four games per team.
Yeah, I think you're right. Next week, we're going to have to talk about our first fab run in labor. Cause we'll start preparing for that. Now, yes, what do we have on this team again? Oh yeah. So, hey,
Trey Mancini is my first baseman in that league, and I have no other first baseman on the roster.
I'm sorry, who was the player?
Trey Mancini is my first baseman. Get well soon. I'm pulling for him, but he's my first baseman, and there's no one else on my roster who's first base eligible. So I know what I'll be looking for first and foremost.
Yeah, well, it's good to know you have a player you can release. So there's that.
I might keep him. It's unlimited IL. I might keep him on my IL season just as like just someone cheering on the team.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah. Don't even have to.
I like him. I'm not upset with him. Sometimes you know when a fantasy player lets you down and you're frustrated with him and you're like, forget it. I'm getting this. I don't even want to see his name when I pull up my team. Right. I don't feel that way at all about Trey Mancini.
Of course not.
He might he might hang around.
Yeah, I like that.
Just keep him on the IL and enjoy him.
I like that there. Team chemistry.
Yeah.
Very underrated in fantasy.
For sure.
All right. You and I are both doing the Scott Fishbowl. Your league seems to be going a little slower than mine, and mine's not exactly going fast. We're at the 4-5 turn. The person at the turn made one of their two picks, but then has been over an hour for the next one. So
weird. I can't figure. I'm on a turn. Like, come on. Both your picks come within 2 minutes of each other. Like, just figure out the two picks and make. I can't figure that one out. Make the two picks.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel too. But yeah, so it goes. So it's okay. I was recording during that whole stretch, so I wasn't going to make a pick anyhow. But it sure would have been nice to like get done with the podcast and I got a pick to make. Would have been nice. But so you started with McCaffrey. What'd you get for your? And you said you're still waiting for your. Yeah, so you're in the third, so you've made your next two picks. Who else do you have?
Yeah, so I started Christian McCaffrey, and then on the 2-3 turn, I took Russell Wilson and Aaron Jones. And for people who aren't familiar with the Scott Fishbowl rules, it's kind of a super flex because there's four flex spots, and one of them you can use a quarterback. So it's
definitely a super flex.
I count it as, and now it's deeper than most super flex. Most super flex leagues don't have three other flex spots where you can't use a quarterback. But anyways, I'd say the more I got into draft prep for this league and researching the rules, I think it actually has some great lessons to be learned for baseball, because Scott does an amazing job tweaking his rules so that you can't just follow NFFC ADP or whatever, like just generic ADP. He makes his rules different. It makes it basically so that every position has so all four positions had players taken in the first round of, I would say, probably every draft, you know, had a tight end in the first round and quarterbacks in the first round. I think he does an awesome job with it, where every position ends up being really valuable. So anyways, I took Russell Wilson, who was about my QB, I think, four on my list. So I was really happy with that at the end. And I have Aaron Jones still higher. I know the regression is coming, but I don't think it's quite as severe as some people have made it out to be. So I was really happy to take him.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been available to you in my league. He
would not have been. I've seen him in round three in a lot of leagues. I just, without getting too football-y, like, I think regression's coming with him, but he's still in my top 10 or so running back. So to get him at pick 25, I thought was pretty good. Now I'm just waiting. And I do think it's funny. Some guys get so fired up about the waiting. And then and I get it. We want to keep moving. But on the other hand, like, football season's not starting next week. Like, if the draft takes 8 days or 14 days, like, whatever, it's still going to be done in July, and there's still going to be, you know, lots of time before the season. So you're a little further ahead than us.
Yep. And I drafted out of the 7th spot. Honestly, I think 7 was an inflection point in the draft. You know, I took Dalvin Cook, but the two in almost every draft, Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, because it's a super flex league, because of the way the scoring is, those two are, you know, going the first 5 picks, and it was 1 and 3 respectively in this league. McCaffrey, Barkley, Kamara, Elliott all went also. So do I take the 5th running back? Do I take a tight end? Do I take a receiver? You know, do I go with yet another quarterback? I ended up going Dalvin Cook, went with the, I thought, the last of the top tier of running backs. But, you know, I had some second thoughts about not going Kelsey there. And of course, Kelsey went exactly the next pick. Drew Brees, and here's the reason why, too, is because tight ends, it's the scoring system is not just a half point PPR, it's half point first down also, and then tight ends get an extra half point for each of those. So he really tries to bump up the tight end value, but not outrageously so either.
That's right. Like I said, he does a great job how he sets that up. I don't know if I would have gone. I think they're pretty bunched, to be honest. Like, yeah. So I actually have George Kittle as my top tight end. I think I just a little bit ahead of Kelsey. I think the 49ers will have to throw a little more this season. But I have Kittle and Kelsey. I have Michael Thomas. I have Cook all within, you know, a few projection points of each other. So, I think you're right. Around pick 7 is kind of where you could really go in any direction. Those first 5 or 6 picks are kind of laid out with Lamar Jackson and Mahomes and McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley and Ezekiel Elliott. And then around pick 6 or 7 is when it starts to really, you could really go in any direction.
Yeah, that's right.
In this particular format. So you started with Dalvin Cook.
I also have Russell Wilson. He was my number 3 quarterback. He was the 5th one taken in my draft. Nick Chubb went 1 spot before me, Kittle 2 spots before me. Would have had a hard decision had those guys made it. But given that, I'm happy. I was happy with that. It was, and then Dak went right after. I think either one of those two I would have been happy with. But very, very pleased to get that. Then follow that up with Jonathan Taylor. A little bit of a risky pick there. But I thought I wanted to get 2 running backs early. I think everybody's waiting on wide receivers, first of all. Secondly, you know, the Mark Andrews is already gone in this draft. I could have taken Ertz, I suppose. But my plan all along is I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to let everybody push up tight ends. I'm going to try to make it up in volume, take 3 of them, and hopefully one of them has a Mark Andrews-like breakout season. So I probably won't see me get a tight end until probably around 8 or 9 is my guess. We'll see.
Yeah. So you're feeling pretty confident that Jonathan Taylor will be the man at some point this season.
Yep. And I think that, you know, because it's also a half point for first downs, he doesn't get hurt by, you know, Nyheim Hines getting most of the pass catching, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I like Jonathan Taylor, the player. I'm not fully buying in as much as you are that he'll take over this year. I wonder if it'll be a next year takeover, but I really like the player. So, and if, you know, all things being equal, He might have been my favorite running back. Him or Dobbins really were my favorite running backs in this year's draft. So more than CEH. So I like the player, and I love that offensive line. If it works, like he certainly has, he could be in the first round next year.
Right. And there is an overall component to that too. So I kind of wanted to go with the guy with that could really possibly have a huge monster season. And I think he is that guy. And then round four, I got my first receiver, Allen Robinson. You know, it cost, you know, going Taylor cost me Hopkins, it cost me Godwin, cost me Beckham. I would have been happy with any one of those, you know, obviously. But instead, I got Robinson, who I just love. I think he's going to get such a huge target share that I think that, you know, I'm happy with him being my first receiver. And I think I'm going to be getting a lot of receivers in the next few rounds. So pretty happy with the way the draft's gone so far. I'd like it to go a little faster, but that's okay.
Yeah, we all would. At the same time, I guess we should just savor it. So, did you say Hopkins was still there when you took Taylor? Like he
was. That was a tough call.
Yeah, like I have him. I'm not even a big Hopkins guy, but I have him sixth, I think, in this format for my wide receivers. And I find he's fall. I don't know why. I don't know why, but I find he's falling. I guess it's just people don't trust him as much on a new team. But
I think it's just receivers. Period are falling.
Yeah, I think that's probably it too. Just I'd be interested to know what receiver. You don't have to look it up right now or anything, but how many receivers went before him? But yeah, maybe it's just that receivers are falling.
I can tell you real quick, because I think it's, let's see. Thomas and Adams went in the first round, and then the next receiver didn't go all the way until 3-4 with Tyreek Hill.
Wow.
Julio Jones went 3. So that's the fourth receiver went 3-8. Hopkins was the fifth receiver at 3-10.
Wow. Yeah. I was actually planning on taking Julio Jones at the end of the second round, and then he ended up in my league going, he was either late first or early. Second. He went very early in the second.
Yeah.
So in your draft, especially, receivers are really falling.
Yep. So it just means that everybody's going to be, the only thing I don't like is everybody's going to be right there with me taking receivers now, but
there'll be a round here coming up very soon, or even two rounds where 2/3 of the picks at least are receivers.
And it's kind of going that way already. So
yeah,
and some people taking their second quarterback.
You're in the run with Allen Robinson. You're in on the run.
Yep.
We'll see where it goes from there.
Exactly. All right. That's going to close up shop for this week. I want to thank everybody for listening. As always, please help us out. Please subscribe, rate, review our podcast. It does help us a lot, especially the, you know, subscribing is the big part about that. But if you can rate and review us, that would be most appreciated too. All those things matter a lot to us. So we do thank you quite a bit. Good luck in your drafts this week. Good luck surfing the news and the ever-changing news cycle, and hopefully you can avoid those whammies. We'll get Prospect Podcast tomorrow with Clay and James. Thanks, as always, for listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast.